on other occasions I have spoken at length about this passage about the little while. So I'm only going to spend a little while talking about it this time, and then I want to focus on the first reading. But what's clear is that the little while Jesus is talking about is the time of suffering. After a little while, the time of suffering is over, and then is the time of joy. It's a consoling passage if we can keep it in mind, but it's only consoling if we understand God's approach to time as opposed to our experience of time. Now, God is outside of time, so for him, everything is now. There's no such thing as a little while. It's all now. But for us, marching through time as we do, we experience times of suffering as being long and times of joy as being too short. So what he's doing is he's trying to give us another understanding of what's really going on. Times of suffering, because they will not last, are a little while. Now, it's not the experiential little while, but it's from God's perspective. To give us perspective, this will pass. This time of suffering will pass. Now, we all know that suffering, especially if it's severe, seems endless. If you ever have a toothache, or if you ever have a severe pain, you know that it's just agonizing, and it goes on forever, even if it's only a few minutes. So this is perspective. That what Jesus is saying here is that experience of suffering, whether it's physical suffering or moral, emotional suffering, it doesn't last forever. And when looking back on it, especially from the next life, so when we're reigning in glory, it will seem like nothing. Times of suffering seem like nothing. So it's a good thing to remember, although it's hard to remember when we're suffering. Now, let me shift gears a little bit. I want to get to Paul and his experience in Corinth, but before I do, let me just say a word about today's saint, Saint Pope John I. He was only pope for a few years, a little while, only pope 3 years. That's, to us, a short time. But his experience dragged out because of the suffering he was forced to endure. And he got caught between East and West. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because we see the battle of East and West, at least Eastern Europe, Western Europe, in the war in Ukraine right now. And Pope Francis is kind of stuck in the middle of it, or trying his best to do something about it. But you see what happened with Pope John I. The Eastern Emperor and the Western Emperor, the highest leaders in the two parts of the European civilization, were opposed to each other. And John, the Pope, went from Rome, from the Western side, to Constantinople, the Eastern side, to try to bring about some kind of reconciliation. It was both a political and a religious controversy, and also social and naturally. There's all kinds of reasons why people are divided. It didn't work out. The Western Emperor thought that the Pope had betrayed him, and so when he got back to Rome, he pretty much threw him in prison. Now, this is not the time when popes could just have their heads cut off, like in the early church, when almost all the popes were martyred. This is up to in the 6th century already, and you can't just cut off the head of a pope. So what he did is he just kind of threw him away, put him off in an exile, and neglected him to death. That's we still consider him a martyr, but he was basically just left to die, neglected to death. Well, neither the East nor the West was happy with it. The reason I mention this now is because we have this battle between Russia and Ukraine, Russia representing East and Eastern Orthodoxy in general, Eastern culture, Eastern European culture in general. Ukraine, especially backed by the Americans, represents the West, and the two are just not going to get along, and that war is looks like it's going to go on forever. Well, Pope Francis has tried everything he possibly can to get into the middle of it and propose a path to peace, which is what I think most people want anyway. The Russians don't want anything to do with the Pope because they think he's siding with the Ukrainians. The Ukrainians don't want anything to do with the Pope because they think he's siding with the Russians. Well, There we go. There's John the First in exile. Pope Francis is in a kind of political exile. Nobody wants to listen to the Pope. Okay. It doesn't mean that it's a failure. What we have here is the necessity of proclaiming the gospel, good times and bad times, proclaiming the gospel to all sides, no matter the cost. Well, let's turn to St. Paul and his experience. Yesterday he was at Athens, high culture, pretty much a failure there. He didn't have much effect. He could see that he wasn't getting anywhere. So he decides to leave Athens and go to Corinth, which is low culture, meaning Corinth was the seaport area, something like going from, I don't know what, from Ayala Avenue or Greenbelt or somewhere up in that area, Forbes Park, going to Tondo or the port area of Manila, where there's a mixture of people. Sure, there's also all a mixture of people. That's Corinth. Corinth is a seaside area, port area. In Athens, I can't remember if there were any Jews there. I don't remember any mention of a synagogue. Athens was full of all kinds of religious shrines, but I don't think Judaism was one of them. Remember when Paul was in up north in Macedonia, in Philippi, there was no synagogue. They had to pray outside the town. So that's in Philippi. Then in Athens, he didn't find any welcome. Down in Corinth, there is a synagogue. And he goes there every Sabbath, talk with the Jews and the Greeks. What I'd like to focus on here is how the Acts of the Apostles is all about the growth of the church, right? But it's also about the personal experience of the people who are promoting the church, in this case, Paul. So personal experience and the big picture, they go together. From Paul's personal experience, he leaves his failure in Athens, he goes to Corinth, and he meets a very surprising couple, Aquila and Priscilla. They are Jews. At least Aquila is from somewhere in Asia Minor. We don't know where Priscilla is exactly from, maybe from the same place, but they had gone to Rome. They went to Italy. And they get kicked out. So they're back here in Corinth. They're already Christians. Now, we don't know how they encountered the gospel, but as far as we know, they weren't converted by Paul, but he has this personal connection with them because they were tent makers, and it turns out Paul also was a tent maker. We don't know anything else about his tent making. I don't think it's mentioned anywhere else in the Bible, but Paul apparently had a trade, probably from his family or his background, you know, rabbi. He was a Pharisee. He was an educated man. You know, we know a lot about Paul, even before his conversion. He wasn't spending his time tent making. He was spending his time persecuting the Christians. So tent making wasn't a big preoccupation of his, but it apparently was his trade. And so he has this in common with Aquila and Priscilla. So they're Jews. They're Jews who have become Christians. They're away from home. They're tent makers. They probably got along very well. And it's nice to have friends when you're in a new territory. So on that personal level, he has somebody he can hang out with. On the level of his attempts to bring the gospel to the Jews, he again meets with opposition. They opposed him and reviled him, to the point where he said, okay, that's enough. If you're going to close the door on me, your blood be on your own heads, he says. I don't have any responsibility anymore. You've shut the door. I'm going to go to the Gentiles. Now, this is a shift, not just on the personal level, Paul, but it's a shift in the early church to pour more energy into evangelization of the Gentiles. This is not the only moment this happened, but this is one of the indicators of a shift. And so he goes to the Gentiles, and the Gentiles are very happy to hear the gospel. Many of them believe and are baptized. So, in our own journey, we are part of the Lord's big orchestra And he's working out he's building his kingdom. We just have our own little part in it. So typically we only see a very, very small part. Sometimes we don't see anything. We're left in a kind of darkness. But as we go along, we meet people we can get along with, we meet people we can work with, we meet with opposition. There's always going to be divisions. There's always going to be some challenges, just like St. John the First had, just like Paul has here. And the question is always, well, what do we do? Do we stay here and battle it out? Do we stay here and try to convince people? Or is the Lord telling us, move on and do something else? Anyone who has been active in any kind of prayer group or active in parishes, active in, even in Anuvim, we see this happening. You know, people don't get along. And, you know, little factions form and people who get along with some and not others. And then the question is, well, what does God want you to do now? What does God want me to do now? Should I stay in this parish? Should I stay in this committee? Should I keep working at this task? Does God want me to, you know, work through the challenges here? Or is he telling me to move on? And that's, well, we'll talk about discernment. We'll be talking about discernment this afternoon. But that's part of it. It's personal experience and at the same time, reading signs of external circumstances. As it turns out, Paul recognizes the Lord wants him to stay in Corinth. He didn't stay in Athens. He didn't stay in Philippi. But he does stay in Corinth, and he stays there, but not with the Jews. He stays and works with the Gentiles. So even though he gets along fine with Priscilla and Aquila, he moves into the house of Titus Justus. So he was a Greek, but he was also a worshiper of God. And then he from that kind of neutral territory, he reaches out to anybody who will listen, Greeks and Jews alike. What I'm trying to point out here is that, you know, we're not Paul and we're not in Corinth. We are each ourselves and we're in our own personal experience. But we have to listen, I have to evaluate, we have to respond to the grace of the moment. Sometimes we have to suffer for a little while. A little while we have to suffer. And some sufferings are not to be avoided. That's part of the carrying of the cross. That's certainly part of the Christian life, suffering. So it's not as if every time suffering comes up, that's a sign to us that we have to get out of town. No. But sometimes, if the door closes, it's time to move on to something else. And that's where we have to be very sensitive to the guidance of the Holy Spirit. Tomorrow we begin our novena to the Holy Spirit. Already we should be opening our hearts and minds more and more to the guidance of this advocate, the paraclete, who will guide us into all truth. Into all truth meaning, yes, all the truth of the gospel, but also the truth about what God's plan is, what God's will is for us today and in our circumstances and relationships of today. We can be confident in God, even if we have to suffer for a little while. That little while does not last forever. And if we're faithful, following the Holy Spirit, it will bear fruit in the long run.